My name is Nathaniel James. I'll be moderating the panel, and I think I can speak for everyone that we're really happy to see you and excited to be here. And so all of our projects are highly participatory, and we wanted to try to bring some of that to this panel format right at the beginning. So we have some questions for you right now. Just by show of hands, how many in the room have given to a Kickstarter campaign or other crowdfunding campaign? Cool. Yeah, me too. Great. Thank you. And how many of you have run a crowdfunding campaign? Okay. Cool. And have any of you applied for a micro grant? So not crowdfunding, but you know, applied for something that our like our organizations provide. Okay. Great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Great. We're glad you're here and to learn about it. And. Does anybody here in the room work for a traditional philanthropy, work for a foundation or anything like that? Couple? Okay, all right, great. Okay, this is a very good mix. So we want to invite you, the way we're going to do this is everyone's got 5 minutes, and I think they're going to be pretty good about that. We want to have a conversation with you, and we've all agreed that if you have a question while we're presenting, by all means, go ahead and raise your hand. I think we have some friends who are helping us with mics, and they want you mic'd for the question for the web broadcast. So. I think with that, we'll dive in, and just come up and or wave us down to if you have a question as we proceed. So, and here's our hashtag and all of that. So I'm just going to say really briefly about the project that brought me into this world, which is called the Awesome Foundation. I founded the Seattle chapter. It's very simple. Local chapters give $1,000 micro grants out every month to the most awesome project that comes through a very simple web form. And so we learn about it here and at these sites, and we have now 35 chapters of the Awesome Foundation, I believe on 4 continents, if not 3. And it was founded in 2009. So in the last 3 years, we've seen this really great growth, and it's $1,000 at a time, but then there's 30 chapters, you know, so I think we're starting to have a really great impact on the world. And I'm happy to answer questions when we get to that phase, but I want to move on to our other panelists and let them share their work. So, Daniel, go ahead and just introduce yourself.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Daniel Kaufman, and I am the co-founder of the 1% Foundation. I'm just actually curious, how many of you have actually heard of the 1% Foundation? All right. And for those who haven't, I just want to be upfront. We have absolutely nothing to do with Occupy. we had this name way, way, way before they did. It's actually, when people hear about us post Occupy Wall Street, this runs very counterintuitive to what most people expect. So what we are is an organization, and it's interesting to be framed in this notion of community grant making, because while we are a grant-making organization, the grant-making piece sort of comes second for us. What we really are is an organization dedicated to building and facilitating the next generation of philanthropists. And specifically, what we're really interested in doing is engaging people who traditionally don't perceive themselves as having a role in the space, as a philanthropist. Most people think about this concept of Bill Gates, right? When you think about philanthropy and individual philanthropists, what we're really interested in doing is finding Bill Gates at 22, and even not necessarily somebody who's going to become Bill Gates, but somebody who is going to become a second grade teacher or somebody who is going to go work at the DMV. It's this notion that philanthropy really is for everyone. And the way that we work, really quickly, I don't want to go over time, and I really do want to make sure we have time for discussion. The way that we work is we try to tackle the 3 main barriers that we've identified as limiting participation in philanthropy for people entering the workforce for the first time. And those are affordability, knowledge, and impact. And so most people who are making money for the first time just don't think they can afford to participate. Second, they have, even if they want to give, most feel like they're totally overwhelmed with the number of nonprofits. I think the latest count is that there's 1.5 million registered 501c3s in the United States. And they just have no idea where to even start. And then third piece is that they feel like even if they want to give, they know where they want to give. whatever they're going to give is just going to be a drop in the bucket. And so what we do is we've created this platform online to facilitate this network of giving circles. We get people to make a commitment to give at least 1% of their annual income. They set up monthly recurring donations online. We aggregate those. And then we facilitate a process to engage everybody who's made that commitment in selecting our grantees. So I joke around that I started a foundation, I've run a foundation, and I have absolutely no control over who I actually get to fund. So each quarter, we take a different issue area, we'll say education. The first month, anybody who's made the commitment can nominate an organization in that space to receive the funding. During the second month, we take a group of volunteers, it rotates every quarter, and we train them how to do the diligence around the nominees. They learn how to read an organization's financials, they speak to somebody on staff, they do some independent research, and they vet all of these organizations, they narrow down all of the groups down to five finalists, and then during the third month, we provide all kinds of education to everybody in the circle about those five finalists. Ask them to come back online, vote. The top few finishers get the grant from the foundation, and then we rinse and repeat. So I'm happy to talk more about this. I think there's incredible benefits that we've already seen coming out of this, and I would love to sort of engage in a conversation around it.
Do you want to pitch about this cool project you're doing?
Yeah, really fast. This is my plug, and I'm happy to talk about this to anyone after. But each year we run this program called Grant Madness, which is around March Madness. It's for anybody. It's just like an office pool that you have, except you make a commitment to give $10, you go online, donate 10 bucks, you fill out your bracket, and instead of competing to win a huge amount of money, you're competing to win the right to give a grant to your favorite organization. So for 10 bucks, you can give out a grant that could be $500, $1,000, $2,000, and there'll be a bunch of winners. So we would love to have all of you, all of your friends, all of your colleagues participate. This is really great timing because you have to sign up before Thursday morning because basketball starts Thursday morning. And it's my favorite time of year. So I hope you can all participate so I can beat you and I can give your money to my favorite organization.
All right. Thanks a lot, Danielle. And then moving over to Amy.
Yeah, hi. My name is Amy Kerhurl. I help run a project called Detroit Soup. It's a monthly granting dinner that funds creative projects in Detroit. So for $5, you get soup, salad, bread, and a vote. And what happens is when you come into the room, there are proposals. There's usually an artist and a lot of strangers or people you may not meet or know before you walk in the room. And we have four different projects that a week ahead of time send in their proposal. And then we have four people share their ideas. And we found that they are filtered under the ideas of urban agriculture, art, social entrepreneurship, and also social justice. And they're not just that one facet, but how are people rethinking and reimagining and re-envisioning Detroit? So you hear these four pitches. They get 3 minutes. They get questions then from the audience, which we've really find like makes or breaks some people's proposals, because it's one thing to pitch a project and then to be very casual about what your project is and what that means for Detroit and for the community. And then what we do is we serve dinner, which oftentimes is donated from different community members. Soup and salad and our bread is also donated from a local bakery. And then this is a really good chance for people to connect. When you hear about these pitches and proposals, you hear about needs in the community. And all of a sudden, you have something that your now new friend or neighbor needs, and you guys can exchange. And so also during the dinner, we have a voting booth, and people vote on what project they think would best help Detroit become a stronger, more viable city. And at the end of the night, about 9:30, we have a winner, and they walk out between $700 and $900. We've been doing the dinner for over 2 years now, and our last event, our two-year anniversary, had over 400 people in it, which for us was really exciting, not just as a project, but what does that mean for Detroit, a post-industrial city that's pretty hit and pretty hard up, and you have these really young, and I mean young from 18 to 80 who come into the room. As you can see in this photo, we sit on floors, there's doors on crates, and it's a really casual yet super exciting event. We've watched four of our projects turn into nonprofits, community parks be cleaned, gardens be developed, Some of my favorite projects is one called the Empowerment Plan, and it's this wonderful 21-year-old woman named Veronica Scott who turns has developed a coat that turns into a sleeping bag, and has been now on CNN, NPR. Carhartt has given her thousands of yards of material. Many foundations have now supported her project, and we're so lucky to be one of the first people to give a small amount of money. And what happens is, what we found is that between $700 and $1,000, it gets your idea off the ground. It's not going to pay you. You're not going to, I mean, in Detroit, if you're an artist, you probably could live for a month and a half on $700, and I'm not joking about that either. So these get these small grants to fail, to succeed, because we've seen projects who said, I have this really grand idea, and once you realize, wow, this was too big, and I need to refocus and reimagine what this looks like, it's really exciting to see what $800 can change a city. A park can be turned into a playground, or an empty abandoned lot can be turned into a playground with some nuts, bolts and screws. We watched a very dilapidated part of town called Highland Park. A group of 20-year-olds said, we have this abandoned lot. There's pallets, tires, trash. We're going to turn into what they call the Bridge to the Garbage King. And so it is a platform playscape with a tire dragon. And the kids are totally using the space. What's so great about Detroit and why Detroit Soup continues to get a lot of press, but also just a lot of participants, is that we're just are helping people just take that next step and to say, we have a blank slate, not completely, but how are we going to turn this city into something usable and completely amazing? And we've been finding that $5 is really changing the city. So thanks for, and we've given out about $10,000 to this at this point. So,
Can you tell them a little bit about the network? Because Detroit's not unique. There's soups elsewhere.
Sure. Yeah. So Soup is one of many, many groups. There's about 75 different soups around the world. There's a website called SundaySoup.net. And SundaySoup.net shows how you might have a soup dinner in your neighborhood, or if you want to start a soup. It might be called feast, it could be called steak, it could be called soup, it could be called meal. Things are just different. But it's, for us, we found a really a space that's raw, and we continue just to develop it. This photo shows, I think, about a year and a half's worth of work on that space. We've outgrown it, and we've now are going to be in a really raw warehouse, which I think makes it really exciting, because it really, the space allows your ideas to just be that raw as well. So SundaySoup.org, the idea was started in Chicago.
Thank you. And so I think we're moving to Joaquin now.
Hi, my name is Joaquin Wee, and I'm with the Social Justice Fund. And we're a unique organization, and also not very unique, because we were a traditional foundation. We were a member-funded foundation. We, in some ways, still are. Started in about 30 years ago. And because of this thing called the financial crisis, we kind of had to change our strategy around fundraising and around participatory philanthropy. And we have this new model, but it's really an old model that's reactivated, if you will, brought back to today. And what it entails is these giving projects. And so the first giving project was 2 years ago. And just to clarify, you know, we have three kind of criteria for organizations that we grant to before I talk about the money part. So one, we serve the Northwest. So you have to be an organization. You don't have to be a nonprofit. You can be a grassroots organization that is doing amazing work, but you have to be an organization in the Northwest. So that's Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. So that's one. Two, you have to be an organization that is organizing to build power in a community. So basically it means that, that's a lot of words, it means that you're doing education, consciousness raising, talking about systems with the strategy of community organizing and building power by having folks come together, maybe get involved civically, or from the grassroots up, building something that's going to help the community. So that's the other aspect. And number three, you can't really be a social service organization. And the reason why we do that is because most of the other foundations around the country, not all, but most, tend to fund a lot of social service organizations. So you can, you know, a lot of social service groups get funds from the government, from the Gateses of the world, the Fords of the world, and that's fine. We serve to fill a niche where there are organizations doing amazing work, but no one will touch them because maybe changing the system is a little controversial, or maybe the metrics for that is a little hard to measure. So that's our focus. Now, the way that we raise this money is very similar to what my fellow panelists are doing. The Giving Project, let's see, 2 years ago, it's called the Next Generation Giving Project. That's our pilot project. And that's for organizers and activists under the age of 40. Really simple. And again, we're granting to groups who follow the criteria that I just mentioned. And we brought together 18 folks, just 18 community members in the Seattle area. And it was a collaboration with this other group called Resource Generation. And Resource Generation, they're an organization that, they're a national organization that organizes young people with financial wealth to leverage their resources and their privilege for social change. Okay, but the folks who came to this were a mix. I mean, some were, you know, techies with a lot of money. Others were non-profiteers with just, you know, enough to get by. So it was a healthy mix. And there are three things that folks had to do. And you can tell I like three. Three things that folks had to do in this particular giving project. So you come together. One, you give an amount that's meaningful to you. So four, we have a guy who works at Google. A meaningful amount to him is $40,000. That's great. So for other folks, a meaningful amount to them was like $400. And then for other folks, it was $40. That's fine. It has to be meaningful to you. So two, you also have to organize in your networks. You got to go into your networks, whether it's your family, friends, acquaintances, your golf club, whatever, and you organize them to give money to the pot, right? So you have your money and you have other networks' money, and you're selling them this idea. You're pitching them this idea of contributing to organizations that create and build power, right? So that's two. And three is the community building aspect of it. So there's two meetings a month for about 8 months where you're talking intensely about class. You know, no one likes to talk about class. We talk about class, how much you make, you know, how important it is for folks of privilege to contribute to grassroots organizations, what that means for the future, you know, and how to ask for money, because asking for money is really difficult, as you might imagine. And so talking about strategies around asking for money. I come from the public radio world. I used to be a journalist in radio. And as you know, if you listen to public radio, we love asking for money. And so we share those strategies with folks to find out what works and doesn't work. And then through this 8-month process, as we're accruing, you know, money and talking about these issues, toward the end of it, we open the application process, and then organizations from all over the Northwest send in their applications, and then we as a group look them over, learn how to read financials, how to evaluate an organization based on not only the work that they're doing, but the application they've presented. And then through a consensus process, through a long, arduous, hair-pulling consensus process, which I love, I absolutely love, we narrow it down to, you know, a certain group of organizations. And it kind of depends on how much we've raised. So the first group of folks, they raised $180,000. I think there was 18 of them, 18 or 15 to 18 of them. And so they gave out 14 $10,000 grants. And now $10,000 may not seem like a lot, but to certain organizations that are doing organizing in their spare time that have a budget of just $10,000, bam, that just helped out their whole year right there. Okay, so we're talking, you know, really small organizations doing big, impactful work. For the group that I was in, which was last year, the NGGP group, we raised 100, there was 15 of us again, and we raised $130,000, and we were able to give out 10 $10,000 grants. And it was so successful. This project was so wildly successful, not just for the people who are a part of it, but also for the groups that came aboard. So it started in 2010 with one. 2011, we have five, each one raising various amounts of money. We had the Next Generation Giving Project, which I like to call the young one. We have the Environmental Justice Project, or the green one. We have the LGBTQI, or the queer one. We have the Go In and Get Them, which is the civic one, and then we had the Montana one, which is the Montana one. Montana needs a lot of help. I don't know if any of you are from Montana, but there needs a lot of social justice issues that they need to help, need to get funding for. So 2012, this year, we've now expanded to 8 giving projects, and people are really excited about it. And what generally happens is the folks that I ask for money, you know, I put them into this process, and they're really involved and invested following what happens. And then in the end, they end up becoming the next year's crop of organizers. And so we identify people as organizer or donor organizers. And like Nathan was saying, or sorry, like Daniel was saying, we really want to change people's view of what a philanthropist is. We want people to be empowered to think that philanthropy isn't just for the Carnegies, the Gates, the Rockefellers of the world. It's you, you know, and it's organizing folks together to help fund these organizations and to have these really intense conversations about class, about privilege, et cetera, that really makes the difference and allows people to see themselves as philanthropists funding this amazing movement-building work across the Northwest. I have a lot more to say, but I'm going to wait for you to ask that question so I can jump on in. I'll let the next person go.
All right, thanks a lot, man. And finally, we've got Rishi.
Hey, everybody. My name is Rishi Jaitley. I'm also from Detroit, where there's a lot going on right now. In Detroit, I lead grant making for the Knight Foundation across the city, and we invest in initiatives that make it easy for the general public, Detroiters everywhere, to connect with, engage with, support the movement of entrepreneurs, artists, and particularly young people across the city these last few years. So what I'll do is I'll just quickly run through some examples. These are a bunch of projects where the Knight Foundation is affiliated with in Detroit that kind of connect to what we're talking about. I'll just tell you a little bit about it and tell you how we, kind of what were the big questions we ask as it relates to community philanthropy. I came to Detroit in Michigan, not from there, came there to start something called Michigan Core, which is a social network for Michigan people around the state and around the world to connect with one another on their common home identity and collaborate together on social change. And as part of that, I co-founded Kiva Detroit, which is the first big community organized micro lending initiative in America, and was the first Kiva city that launched last year. So what Kiva Detroit is really a volunteer network of Detroiters who themselves source small businesses in the community that need microloans. They walk them through a loan process, and then they themselves make loans to these entrepreneurs in their own community over the internet, $25 at a time. First time, really, it's still starting up, and we at the Knight Foundation are also supporting this initiative. Be Me up there is a social network for black males across the city of Detroit. But the social network there's a catch, though. The only way you can join the social network is by sharing your own story of leadership. So within 6 weeks, we had nearly 1,000 teenagers and men from across the city of Detroit join, from Jalen Rose to a 10-year-old, share their story of leadership. And what you get when you join that network is an opportunity to connect with like-minded people from across the community and get access to grants and community dollars and much more for all the projects you're doing in community. Bunch of other things. Hatch Detroit at the bottom left is something we supported, which is a retail entrepreneurship contest for the city, kind of a cross between American Idol and retail entrepreneurship, where 65,000 Detroiters cast votes about what they want to see as the next big retail business in Detroit, and pull together dollars and stuff, and there was a winner last year. Couple of other platforms, which are about call to action, is about creating easy opportunities for Detroiters to commit to volunteer hours across the city of Detroit. And the Urban Innovation Exchange there is a learning network for Detroiters who are working as citizen philanthropists, citizen doers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Plenty more examples. There's too many examples of philanthropy for everyone in Detroit right now. We're funding something called Citizen Effect, Detroit for Detroit, where citizens are partnering with nonprofits across the city and raising money on behalf of nonprofits. But there's one big question that we ask constantly as we think about community grant making is how do we go from pockets of impact, you know, kind of what some would argue are sort of cute narratives of impact, to real strategic change in community? And that's a really important thing for this field to think about, right? How do we, one, present ourselves credibly across to everyone, and how do we drive real strategic citywide impact? And there are three things that I think are really important. One has to do with identity, which is the best initiatives in community philanthropy, I think, play not only to people's, hey, give and change the world, but play to people's native selves, which has to do with ego, recognition. You know, when you run around and try to raise money, you quickly learn that people give money for a whole host of reasons. In addition to wanting to make the world better, a lot of people just want to be recognized. And I think what all of these initiatives have in common is that they pay special attention to how do you recognize the donor, recognize the giver. And I think that's just really important. So that's one way we drive participation. The other thing, as you may have heard as I was running through this, we pay attention to relationships, in addition to paying attention to dollars. So a lot of these initiatives actually spend more time thinking about network building and connecting the donors post the donation than about the act of giving. Because real change, of course, no one's got enough money to drive enough progress anywhere. So real change occurs when you can figure out imaginative ways to keep people together. And then finally, institutional support for all of this stuff. So behind all of these initiatives are supporters that you might not expect, from the mayor's office to big banks to the governor's office to big corporations to the auto companies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so part of what we try to do in Detroit is ensure that all of this amazing startup-y, internet-y work around community grant making has support from people who have megaphones, who have big dollars, and have big footprints. Because if we don't do it, we won't become strategic in our ability to make a big difference in our city. And so we're doing a little bit of both in Detroit, and looking forward to the conversation.
All right, thanks everyone. This is I'm really excited, and so. And I already knew some of your stories, and I'm really excited to hear what you're doing. What I'd like to do is invite questions. I have some if others in the audience aren't ready, but just wave your hand if you want to ask a question or have a comment. It looks like there's one and two here at least. Can you say your name and like where you're from?
My name is Andrew. I work with Fidelity Charitable Donor Advised Fund. A couple of sort of thoughts, I guess, not specific questions. One, just curious to hear all of your opinions, because I'm sure they'll be different around any kind of standards for these organizations as you're looking at them. It's a question that comes up all the time. And then also, I'm in the process of, you know, we have. Basically, we're, you know, money flows through us, so we don't do any recommending around specific organizations, but we have an opportunity because there's a lot of dollars that are flowing through the organization to help the donors organize with each other or, you know, around where those dollars might go. So curious if you have any thoughts specifically around that kind of an organization, if that makes sense.
I'll jump in real quick. I think what we found, and myself included, is that I think most giving organizations want to see metrics, numbers, change, development. And I think what happens is if you get funded from a project like Detroit Soup that has now gotten a lot of recognition from the community and nationally as well, I think it really shares and shows that you've connected with your neighbors. And I think that's usually a good point to then, when you have a project that said, we were funded from Detroit Soup, I think more people are willing to, and the next step and the next tier and the next level, if they want to keep going with their project, they have something to fall back on. Like the idea that Veronica started with us, like, I think helps along the way, especially some other nonprofits too. I mean, it's just an instant. I had 150 to 200 people say, I love your project. And I think that says a lot, at least on our end.
Yeah, I would add to that. I mean, the question So we've had a very, very similar response, our experience. But I think in terms of the question about standards, we've gone back and forth about this, right? We've thought, okay, well, you know, should we set up, you know, these baselines for what we'll fund? And we just keep coming back to this notion that the goal here is to democratize giving by engaging a community. And so a lot of that requires just trusting the community. And so we've said, this is your money. You've decided to form this community together. You're going to collectively report back to one another, inform one another, and select an organization together. And it's amazing how well that has worked out. I mean, we have, I think, I don't want to say that we are a bellwether, but we're a bellwether in terms of we have done a very good job of identifying organizations that are about to emerge as major leaders in their field. There are organizations that we have funded, you know, very early on in their rise that have later been funded by, you know, won awards from Skoll Foundation, that have been funded by Draper Richards, that have, you know, become Gates grantees. And I think, I don't think that they care whether we've funded them, but I think it shows that the community is very smart, yeah. I think.
And I would just add, kind of building on that, I think the field is moving in a direction where inputs are becoming outputs too, is a way to think about it. In other words, the number of people you mobilize, network, engage, involve, et cetera, along the way is just as crucial as sort of the issue-based metric you're chasing. And the field isn't there yet, but we at Knight Foundation have issued a bunch of reports on connected citizens and other things. If you were to ask Facebook to, how do you quantify your social impact, you know, they'd probably talk about users and usage as a reflection of that. And so I think of all of this work as being about driving usage, really.
Yeah, I'm going to step away from moderating just to say, like, a conversation about standards is a conversation about risk, right? And so for the Awesome Foundation, we're like, we're only doing $1,000 a month. It's so low risk that we can take a chance, you know. There's no overhead, you know. There's not a major loss. So we can be really playful. I mean, I think that's maybe something. I don't know. Your soup is pretty playful too.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know how playful your other groups is, but Awesome Foundation has a sense of play too, like that you can come in and it's like a club and you can get things started in your community. So there, I think there's room. I think most philanthropists and philanthropy projects need to be very disciplined around this question that you're asking. But I think there's also room for some fun and, like, you know, just risk taking, because it's the stakes are not so high. And so we can create some space for fun too.
And the Social Justice Fund has always been an organization that focuses a lot on movement building and community organizing. And, you know, at the foundation of community organizing is that this stuff will take a long time. Changing hearts and minds, not overnight. And so there are organizations we've funded that, you know, they keep coming back to us and we are their major source of funding, but it's okay because we're crowdsourcing. Is that what we're doing? I think that's what we're doing. As we bring people in, they know what's going on in the community around, maybe they have a friend of a friend who's worked with the organization. And so because we are bringing funders in to meet organizations and to do site visits and to have these really intense discussions around organizations, we often know the pulse of what's happening on the ground and with communities because we're bringing so many people in. So, you know, it's it is, as my fellow panelists were saying, it is risky because it's not quantifiable in terms of this is how many people you've organized and this is how many people who are now full-time organizers or anything like that. It's more taking a pulse on that buzz from not only people in the community for these community meetings, but also people who come in who say, oh, yeah, they're doing great work, and here's why. Or I had a great experience with them, and here's what happened to me. And then the other part of that, too, is that a lot of our donor organizers come in, and they find out these amazing organizations doing great work, and it's now on their radar. And then they can reference that or, you know, turn other people to these organizations, and it creates just this close-knit and builds bridges between funders, organizers, donors, people doing the work, and it allows people to really you know, to really be frank about their valuations. You know, that organization, they're not as doing as well as they used to, and here's why. And I think that that kind of, that model is I think that's more on the rise, especially in, since a lot of these grants are, you know, relatively small, $10,000, $5,000, $1,000.
I think we have a question in the black T-shirt there.
Yeah, hello. Hi, my name is Tom Langridge. I'm with MediaFire. I have a question that's...
Can you bring your mic a little closer?
Sure. You mentioned crowdsourcing for labor and, you know, for people to help out with the projects you're doing. I'm wondering if you guys have explored crowdfunding with services like Kickstarter, and also what other technology platforms are using to leverage your guys' causes.
Yeah, like, there's one quick thing for the Awesome Foundation, and we do a very bad job advertising this, but if you win an Awesome Foundation grant, we have a code, we can get you immediately onto Kickstarter. And so, I don't know if you know, but Kickstarter has a vetting process, and not everything gets accepted. But I think it's great, and I just think we need more of that sort of connective tissue between, like, these projects and tech platforms, so thanks for asking.
Yeah, I would just say that a lot of the initiatives we at Knight Foundation invest in will end up being simple landing page-y. So they end up pointing to other platforms where people are actually transacting the dollars, et cetera, et cetera. And so, but I think what's happening in Detroit, again, coming back to this notion of identity, and this may be point unique to Detroit, but I really do think people are craving local locally branded platforms where they might connect with others in community, and I think that's as I think, you know, we all, I think it's human nature to want to crave something local and own it locally, and so I think as a result you see a rise of a lot of this sort of stuff in Detroit because both donors want to feel recognized kind of and known on a local platform, and people who are receiving dollars want to feel like they have connective tissue locally, even if Akiva.org platform is playing some role from San Francisco.
I'll tag team on that since we're talking about Detroit. We found a year and a half ago, RoboCop got it's going to be a statue in Detroit, and it was funded in 3 or 4 days and
from Kickstarter,
and it was a huge hullabaloo in Detroit from Detroit natives. The natives got a little restless. And what happened was is you all of a sudden heard a lot of people, my fellow neighbors and Detroiters, say, well, why did that guy from San Francisco or New York pay $50,000 for a statue in my neighborhood? Like, what do they care? So that it was like a huge dialogue that kind of like translated and transformed. And all of a sudden, which was awesome, all of a sudden you heard all these people go, well, this is what I could do with $50,000, and this is what I can do with $50,000. This is what I would do. And I was like, okay, well, then do something about it. So what we found with Detroit Soup, because I get this a lot too, well, why don't you have an online funding platform? Well, there's a lot of people who want to do a lot of things with Detroit. And if we put it online, all of a sudden we have all these people from who aren't my neighbor, who don't know how my city runs, who takes your view of how your city is and you put it on how I should live my life. And that causes a lot of problems. So what we do with Soup is that we ask you just to be present. Because if you're there, those are those immediate relationships that can be made. And like Rishi said, those relationships in Detroit are worth more than $1 million that you could give me. Because what I've been finding, and even being here right now, spending 15 minutes talking to somebody and sharing, I mean, there was a... can lead to so much more. So we had this theater troupe that said, I need like $500 to clear out an abandoned space, and we're going to do a theater performance in there. And instead, somebody was at the dinner that said, well, I have this humongous, like fits 450 people into my space. You can do the theater performance in there. So fast forward 5 months, I go to support the play because they showed up to my dinner. I saw the space. We did our 2-year anniversary party in there. Over 400 people were able to fit in the space that if he never came to Sue, I would never even know existed in my community, because the space from the outside looks abandoned, but on the inside it's like beautiful, gorgeous brick walls with these delightful skylights and catwalks, and we got to do like a circus show in it and fit 400 people, and like $2,500 was raised, and like that's just by showing up. And so on an online platform, I just did an exchange, and that was on like the socially networked way. But what we find with Soup is the human exchange, and I think in Detroit we need that foundation coupled with social media, but we need the human network first.
Yeah, no, that's great. Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say there are other answers too. Go for it.
Yeah.
I was just also going to add on that, and we were talking about this before, that, you know, I've been in the nonprofit world forever and a day, and I find that the nonprofit world doesn't talk enough to the tech world, and the tech world doesn't really care what's going on in the nonprofit world, which is sad for a number of reasons, but that's changing because I'm here at South by Southwest Interactive. Woohoo! And that is, I think, what then happens is, those of you in the nonprofit world can hopefully agree, is that sometimes innovation in the nonprofit world is really difficult because we tend to move slower than other folks, and our grants and our funds tend to be less secure as maybe the for-profit world. So that's difficult. And then in the tech world, you know, the tech world moves at a blindingly fast rate, and sometimes there's no conscience in the tech world. It's just, we're going to go, 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 and whoever gets left behind, well, you have to be at the table. And so I think that it's really still a wild west out there in regards to tech and the nonprofit and foundation world. I think there's a lot that can be done, a lot of great partnerships, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here. And I love talking with folks to find out ways that we could bring, you know, that technology to our actual networks. Because frankly, with Social Justice Fund, the way we use social media is I get on Facebook and I set a time to meet with my friend, and then we meet in the real world and I talk, give them my pitch on Social Justice Fund. So like, that's it for now. But there's so much more that can happen. It's such a great opportunity. And so I'm really interested in that. And making that happen. But I also agree that because of how localized we are, or hyper-local, as they say, you know, we need to see people, to talk with them about why they want to give money to this thing. And I just need to have that face-to-face. I need to have that phone call. They need to hear my voice so they can hear how passionate I am about why they need to give to Social Justice Fund and how they need to pay it forward. And I think that those relationships can be enhanced by social media. I think those clicks and those connections are important. You need both. You can't really have one without the other. And I think, you know, I've been noticing at South by Southwest Interactive that there, and I was talking with a friend about this, there's kind of a reflective tone to, you know, looking at, okay, we have all these technologies and we're moving forward. You know, can we take a breath a little bit and see, you know, what we can really do to change the world in a certain way with social media and using that to enhance the networks that already exist. And I'm really excited about that.
And we have a pretty good spectrum, I think, could respond. Daniel, I want to invite you because your approach is an online platform, and so didn't want to leave that out of the conversation.
Sure. Yeah, I think that engagement, especially community building, there is a role for technology to play, and there is a role for the offline, regular, traditional interaction to play. And we try to strike a balance. We've created a platform to enable giving circles to form on any issue or on based on geography, however you see fit. We try to support those communities to form, and then we've created this curriculum that requires offline interaction, right? This discussion around working groups about how do you vet these organizations requires, I mean, maybe it's a conference call, maybe it's, you know, getting together in person, it depends on the situation for the giving circle, but you know, we really do think there's incredible power to actually, if we really want to democratize philanthropy, accessibility matters, and technology makes that possible.
Cool, thank you. I think we have a question here.
Sorry, this is only tangentially related to funding, but I wanted to ask it. All of you kind of are...
Can you say your name and where you're coming from?
I'm Clark, and I'm a student at Vanderbilt. So,
thanks.
It sounds like you guys are all kind of uniquely positioned, so you're seeing kind of a steady stream of ideas and initiatives in your community. In that position, what are you doing to kind of connect so that... I'm sure a lot of times it feels like people are maybe recreating the wheel. They've got their baby, they've got their seed, and they want to make it grow. And you kind of realize this is great, but it really fits in with what other people are doing. What are you guys doing in your positions to kind of connect and help these people collaborate and kind of build on best practices and platforms that you're already seeing in your organizations?
You could be a plant. I'm so glad you asked that question. who wants to take that up?
I can start. Yeah, I mean, in my job, I get exposed to virtually every interesting initiative in Detroit, and there are a lot. And a lot of people ask me questions about consolidation and collaboration, and man, you know, as a funder, wouldn't you want to see the nonprofit sector just, you know, consolidate so it's all one big proposal? And I say no. You know, I actually see beauty in redundancy. I think there's something to be celebrated about people innovating in similar spaces, maybe even overlapping geographies now and then. I think that's okay. And I think because the world's big enough where there's just enough people that need mobilizing in this space. But I think what we do have to do is create easy opportunities for exchanges and common identities and shared purposes and all that sort of stuff. So, for instance, that middle logo in there is something called the Urban Innovation Exchange in Detroit, which aspires, among other similar initiatives, aspires to be that, which is, geez, Detroit is becoming a center of sort of micro social entrepreneurship. We gotta learn from one another more effectively and collaborate with one another. And so I try to stay away from conversations about forced collaboration and instead sort of see beauty in it, because there are enough people that need further activating.
So I'll respond to this, and I'll actually sort of politely disagree with Rishi. I think there's a huge problem in the nonprofit space. I think there's way too many organizations. I think there's way too many people who are wedded to their ideas, despite the fact that the market's very clearly telling them that it's not necessary or that it's not desired. There's incredible philanthropic waste. And I think, I was having a conversation with Hewlett Foundation is sort of the leader out there right now thinking about how to create strategic, sort of an ecosystem for strategic philanthropy. He was saying, the program officer was saying that there's now currently like 250 different online platforms to give, right? That's wildly unnecessary. And, you know, each probably has a little bit different approach, but we don't need to do that. And each one of those platforms costs a lot of money to build. Mm-hmm. It's time, energy, resources. And the same is true in every other sector, right? You look at social services, you look at education, you look at the environment. There are a lot of people who have a good idea and they think, I'm going to start it and run with it. And I think it's incumbent upon funders to, make it clear to people that the best way to move forward is not always to start your own organization, and to try to actually build those networks, to connect them, to say, your energy can be better used here. And so when we see something like that, we do try to make those connections. I think it's a really difficult message. I think it's a very hard thing to hear as an entrepreneur, as a social entrepreneur, especially. But I do think that's a really important thing.
I think as I think about both of what you've just said, Detroit's 145 square miles. Sometimes it can take you, with zero traffic, 45 minutes to get across the city. And so where Rishi's coming from, I think, is super important to think about in post-industrial spaces. Because for us, there's probably 45, 50 neighborhoods. Each of them have their own initiatives, development. Certain people have certain skills that they're doing. And I feel like we need to shake hands, but like, it's super important that you are aware of your neighborhood and you're aware of what the neighborhood needs, what those neighbors are. There are certain neighborhoods that are blossoming and growing, and they're using these initiatives, but it's a very, very loose triangle. And what happens is as you move north to the glorified 8 Mile, which is the border of Detroit, you start to see that what happens over here might not work over there, but maybe we need to talk, share successes and failures, and then go back and do them. And maybe this like ebb and flow that happens. And so I think it's this like engagement of the both. And the thing is I found out the other day that 40% of Detroiters don't have online access. 48% are functionally illiterate. We have a jobless rate of 45%, you know, like over and over and over. So when you talk about what does community building look like, $1,000 can reshape a neighborhood where in 2 years those houses could be worth more. So we have a different sense of immediacy and a different sense of need than when I ever lived in Pasadena, when I lived in Cleveland, when I go to New York. Like, I talk to New York artists and I'm like, what you're doing is great. They're like, yeah, but I wrestle with trust fund artists. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I get it, but I don't think I'll ever collaborate with a trust fund artist in Detroit. So knowing that, I mean, like, our artwork comes out of broken palettes, tired, like I said earlier, trash, that none of us have any money, but we love each other and we really want to build the beauty. I mean, it doesn't take much to make it work forward. And so that constant communication is important, but we all need to do it in our neighborhoods because it's even more important.
So I think this is a really important distinction. And I totally agree with what you're saying. I think when I talk about sort of streamlining the nonprofit sector, I do think there's a fundamental difference between hyper-local organizations and artists and organizations that are looking to scale. They want to be the next, you know, next big thing. They want to be Kiva. They want to be, you know, Oxfam. Like, we don't need another Oxfam. We've got Oxfam. We've got Kiva. Mm-hmm. How do you work with them? That's what I'm really talking about. But I think that's a really important distinction.
Yeah, I would also agree with that. And again, speaking as kind of the odd duck, because we don't always grant to nonprofits, for instance. I mean, again, we're focused on movement building. And regarding, you know, tactics for community organizing, it's so varied depending on where you are. Like, organizing in one locality could be completely different from the organizing tactics you use in another locality. So, for instance, one of the grantees is this group out of middle of nowhere Oregon called the Rural Organizing Project, or ROP. And they are a bunch of folks who organize on anti-immigration and I think anti-immigration is their biggest issue that they're, you know, because there's an influx of Latinos in this particular area, and there's been a lot of resistance to that movement. You know, there's been a lot of racism, a lot of hate that's come out. And so what this group has done, and this is just amazing, I'm a city kid, you know, born and raised, and I always get scared of the hinterlands. And so this group, what they do is, they organize based on how anti-immigration is against Jesus' law. Jesus would never call anyone illegal or undocumented, and he would accept everyone. And then they're also saying it's un-American. It's un-American to be against immigration because this country is built on immigrants, and they're wildly successful. Like, I was so happy to give them this grant. And they're doing amazing work in turning that attitude, this anti-immigration attitude, in the middle of nowhere, Oregon. And I think it just speaks to this notion, and I was talking about this earlier before the panel, like, if you can think of the last huge movement in this country that made a great impact, like, I always think of the civil rights movement. Well, how is the civil rights movement funded? How did that work, right? And if you go back and you look, it was through a network of churches in the deep South that would allow community organizers and pastors to rest their head in the church. If someone needed bail money from a sit-down action, they would take a percentage of the tithings from that Sunday, and that would be bail money, right? And it was immensely powerful, and look at the change that it helped lead to. Well, a lot of us today who are doing this work, we're a bunch of heathens. Like, we worship the flying spaghetti monster. We don't go to church. And so we don't have these institutions anymore that are as powerful and as networked that fund movements. So now we have to build our own, and we're doing it. It's amazing. From the Kickstarters and Kivas of the world to the soups and to the social justice funds, we're building those institutions, and it's up to us to have them grow, thrive, and network just like the churches of the South during the Civil Rights Movement.
So we have 6 minutes, and we have one question here. You need a microphone, don't you? Oh, there's already. I didn't see you. Okay, so just before you ask, I want to do, so this is, like, I love all of these projects, and I'm trying to study it. So one little project I wanted to throw out to you that I'm doing is at adventuresinnewgiving.com, where I hope to study these on site in about 10 cities this summer. So if you're interested in this story, I'm trying to tell this story more broadly. So that's my little selfish plug. And you had our last question, and then panelists, we have 5 minutes, so just we're going to have to kind of, like, you know, answer pretty snappy.
Really,
yeah, why don't we both ask them, and then we can...
Yeah, yep. That'd be great. So...
I believe it was Rishi who observed that it's the Knight Foundation that pays special attention to organizations that are paying attention to not only appealing to people's desire to change the world, but also their need to be recognized, one, and two, build relationships. And I'm especially interested in any examples that any of you have come across where online transactions are being converted into recognition, fulfilling that need to be recognized online, and where online transactions are converting into real relationship building and creating a humane relationship.
And then there was a second question. Someone else has a mic. Oh.
I'm wondering if we're entering into an era where we move beyond charity. We talked a lot about Kickstarter, which is about funding projects, but also getting something in return, often a part of that project. Kiva's model is about lending and not just giving. Do we need to be encouraging charities not just to be asking for charity in the traditional sense of not receiving goods and services in return? Or do charities need to think beyond the box and not just ask for charity, but think of different ways of getting charitable revenue?
Two huge topics, 4 minutes. just run it down, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So very quickly on the online relationships piece, we work very, very hard to move those relationships offline. And the relationships for us are less with the funder and the grantee, but more with all of the funders, right? Because our funders are just individuals. So what we've done is we do learning sessions, we'll do happy hours. A lot of this is about fun, right? How do you create a community where people are having a good time? And so we take those relationships, people who don't know each other, who are located in the same city, who care about the same thing, offline so they can meet each other. And those relationships have really blossomed. And I think that only helps support and grow that community. And then in terms of moving beyond charity, I think that's absolutely where we're going. I think that philanthropy is a core value and has a long tradition in this country and will continue to exist, I think, forever. But I do think the nonprofits that are going to survive, I think what we're going to see is a weeding out of nonprofits. I think there are going to be a lot of organizations that are going to fail and have failed in the next decade. And I think the organizations that are going to succeed are those that have built into their, you know, baked into their core values this notion that we're not reliant on your charity. We are a partner with you to solve a problem, and we have developed a set of diverse revenue streams, including for-profit earned revenue ventures that are built into how we work.
Time check, sorry.
Yeah, real quick. So the first question on kind of transactions that yield I think is a fascinating question. So, I mean, all the initiatives I shared yield post the transaction, whether you're sharing your story, whether you're making a loan, post the transaction on the ground all yield offline really special moments of recognition, celebration, and ego boost, which further the kind of behavior you want to see. But what your question made me think of is what if digitally, right, post a transaction, you literally, the transaction itself in some virtual sense yielded that sort of human nature thing that we're talking about. And I'm not aware of, so I think that's just a great idea. And on this point on, you know, revenue and such, you know, I think the natural evolution, you know, as we move from, okay, so we as a field are beginning to figure out how to mobilize people to give in general to things. I think that the natural evolution is that of that is we get good about building in ways to mobilize people to, you know, in some member network driven way, actually help sustain the initiative itself, in addition to sustaining the kind of end goals of the initiative. And so I do think that we will get there.
30 seconds each, basically.
I think I can address your in the front question. I don't think you need something in return. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's helpful. For us at Soup, I think the experience is a gift, and we need more of that.
I think we're moving into an era, a world, or whatever, where people really want to be involved with the things that they're doing. I mean, the thing about you know, social media is that you see pictures, you see some text, and that's great. But I think, again, we're increasingly becoming more aware that we need to have the social awake engagement. And what's happening is that grant-making and philanthropic foundations and organizations are realizing this and are starting to build these projects where people can be fully invested, where they want to meet with funders. They want to meet with grantees, potential grantees. They want to talk and struggle through these issues. And there are other organizations around the country that are taking our model and are also coming up with their own spin on it. There's the North Star Fund in New York. There's also Headwaters Foundation for Justice, which is, I think, in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They have a social change fund. And we're just going to see more and more of this happening. And I think that the payoff is that you're invested in something that you deeply and passionately care about.
So thank you all for coming out. This is a wonderful crowd. We didn't know how many people would be interested, and you've been wonderful questions. And thank you guys, too. Great.